Hello and welcome to Funny Mummies, the podcast for people that hate parenting podcasts. I'm Hattie Ashdown, comedian and writer, and I'm blessed with two lively boys. Each show, I'm joined by funny mummies from the world of comedy, but also those that are aunties or friends, because let's be honest, we all need the help of our non-tired mates. Join us as we find the funny side of parenting, life, and being bloody great women.
Happy Mother's Day!
Lovely people, take a load off. Woo! No, not yet. We're not yet. We're not moving up to the bumper yet. I'm Hattie Ashdown, but you already knew that. That was Aretha Franklin. And this is the Funny Mummies for the Other Woman show on Soho Radio. I'm a bit nasally because I'm just recovering from a cold, which you couldn't say a little while ago, but now you can sort of say that and people are like, yeah, whatever. And I'm joined, of course, by my trusty, also was a little bit poorly, and Gemma Beagley.
Hello.
You're all right now.
I'm all right, yeah. I'm just, you can hear it in my voice. There's something in my head.
Yeah.
That I'm trying to blow out.
And how was half term?
It was a cold. That's what it, that's
just
what
cold
it was.
The whole
yeah.
time?
Yeah, just really dull. Just constant childcare issues. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there's too many school holidays for my liking.
Would you prefer one long 13-weeker?
No, that's true. I don't want lots of big ones. I mean, I don't want one big... Oh, God. Don't worry. We've got a guest today that's going to keep us... I don't know if she's going to keep us on the straight and narrow or take us off the straight and narrow. I'm going to let you introduce her, Gemma.
Our guest today, self-labelled Jamaicish. That's
yes.
half Jamaican and half Irish.
Yep.
This South London bombshell has been performing stand-up since 2008. A resident MC at Top Secret Comedy Club in London's West End. She wows audiences with the guile and wisdom of someone who has seen it all. Her debut hour in 2013, Me and My Little Einstein, has been followed up by Autism Mama and Puberty, which is being performed over the summer for all to see and enjoy.
Yes.
She's mother of three, grandmother of one, and all-round superstar, Josephine Lacey.
Hello, lovely ladies. Hello, beautiful queens. How are you?
You're here.
I'm here.
We got
Thank you.
Thank you
for having me.
A pleasure. Thanks for getting up early on a...
Get up early. I'm normally just going to bed now.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Are you a morning person? I mean, it's a silly question for a comic, isn't it, really? Because you do become a night person. You have to be a night person, don't you, really?
Well, I have a son with special needs and he also has a sleep disorder, so he is up a lot.
He's up a lot?
Yeah.
What time does he get up in the morning, or is it just like a constant through
it's like
the night?
He kind of functions like... Best way to put it is a 36-hour window on about 3-4 hours sleep.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, and but he functions on that. That's like his pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about you? Do you function on that?
I'm here, and I.
Well, she's everybody. She's got a lovely, sexy... The only one I know somehow makes... dungarees look sexy.
She's got the dungarees.
Well, I thought it was mumsy, you know. Like, it is, isn't it? I was thinking last night.
Oh, you're not going to breastfeed anyone today, Josephine.
What am I going to wear? Didn't know what the weather was like. And then they said a bit of rain. And then I went, oh, dungarees, like, they're mumsy.
Yeah.
So I put on my dungarees.
Mind you, I'll tell you that at my place of work, there's lots of young... trendy people.
Yeah.
Trendy. Haven't used that for 30 years.
Oh, my God, all right.
But they Lucy and Yak, you know, it's all dungos. So
yeah,
all the young women are wearing dungos. I tell you what, very bright colours. Very
yes.
1980s play school. Hey, I'm here. I'm working in theatre.
Fluella Benjamin. What's her name?
Fluella Benjamin.
Fluella Benjamin.
Baroness.
Oh, my God.
Baroness Fluella Benjamin.
Benjamin, yeah.
Baroness
That's
now,
not
isn't it?
Me.
We are making such old references, but I think I probably should call this show The Funny Mummies 40 Plus now, because that's what we're moving into, isn't it, Gem?
Yeah.
Well, it's my birthday on Monday.
Oh!
Yeah, I'll be 54.
No!
Yeah.
I was about to say, are you 50 yet? Because I know that's... I know we... So let's go back. So how long have you been in stand-up now? Because I met you when I started out.
I probably didn't meet you to like 2009, because 2008 to 2009 was just the odd little
bit.
I think I'd done about 3 gigs to that December.
And how old were your kids at this point? Roughly.
Roughly. Callum, my youngest, he was 2.
Wow.
Around about 2, because he was born 2006. And then so my daughter would have been coming on 20. Actually, I did my very first gig the day before her 20th birthday. She was at the show. So, yeah. And then some other boy was somewhere in between. You're asking for maths now.
No, I'm just, we're always fascinated about what obviously drives mums to get into stand-up, whether it be it drives them because they want to get out of the house, or obviously, you know, some people start it and then they go back and forth and it's kind of always there, isn't it? It's like a boyfriend, you just can't leave alone, and back and forth to that stand-up.
Yeah, no, I needed a career change. I was in quite a high-profile job at the time.
Can you say? Was it Secret Service?
Yeah, no. I used to set up rolling shelters and cold weather shelters. I worked with the entrenched rough sleepers for a housing organisation, and then I was headhunted to run the services in the borough of Brent for vulnerable adults.
Right.
So I did that for many years. And then the same year my son got his diagnosis, my mum had a heart attack, and she used to watch him while I went back to work after maternity leave. And I looked after both of them until she had her heart operation. And then I just thought, I can't go back into the care system. Right. And I'd kind of lost
myself. Got too much of it at home.
Yeah, and I sunk into a depression, and yeah. And then I turned 40 and I just thought, I'll try something you've never done.
Yeah.
And you'd like to do, and I did it. And then, but it wasn't until 2010 in Edinburgh that I decided to, all right, I think I can do this as a career.
Really?
Yeah. By then a few people had said, you know, your comedy voice is a bit different from everyone else's. And
that's the key,
isn't
it? Just
keep at it.
Having your voice.
Do you think it's different because of your age? So that you started later, you're kind of Jack Whitehall, 18 years old,
yeah.
You know, leaping about the stage. So it's different. Yeah. Or is it your background? Is it your life experience? Like, what is it, do you think, that makes you different to anyone else you might see on a lineup?
I think it's an element of all of them. I mean, with being older, it's not like I don't care. I mean, I'm very careful actually in what I say. Like, most of my comedy is based on my facts.
Sorry, I mean, you're careful.
Oh, it's good.
I mean,
what are you holding back?
In the sense of other, like, minorities, like everything is
okay.
Like,
okay.
It's like on
you
me and
yeah.
my
right
yeah,
okay
my, like on a, at least based on a truth,
yeah,
and how much is embellished about that to make it funny, so be it. But I think I've learned not to fear when my mouth is open, because I know I'm not gonna pick on it's all about me.
Yeah,
it doesn't. Do you know what? I try and talk to an audience like I would talk to my mates. Like, if we were out and about, I just try and talk to them. And that's how I would talk, straight and to the point. I'm very much like, I make my mates laugh, I'm very much like my heritage. I'm black or white.
Right.
I'm not in the middle. I can't do a grey area. I can't do confusion. So
yeah.
I'm very straight to it.
That's perfect, though.
You're so incredibly funny.
Thank you. I'm
wondering why it took you so long to get on stage. So were you funny before, or was this something that, I mean, you must have, you know, like, were you like outwardly funny? Were you the joker
in school
growing
and stuff
up
like
and
that.
Whatever?
Not so much in school. I was always told that I was funny. I've also been told that I don't know how funny I am.
Hmm.
Growing up was more, it was more pained than funny. I think I try to find humour in some ways.
I thought I was going to say in pain. God, no. I've gone a bit deeper, haven't I? But no, but that's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people say, a lot of people were bullied. Comedians were people that were bullied at school. Yeah. I was, and I think it's that classic, isn't it? Like,
reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, in outward settings, I had more of an angry. I hit out, and as for. So hence, like, so at school, I was never asked to do a school play. I was never, because I was always like naughty step or she's done something wrong. So I was never really included like that. Hence why one of my first jokes was just about, well, it was just a mention that, you know, I'm glad to be here. Like, I don't really, the only time I've ever stood up in front of people was in front of a judge and a jury, you know? So, yeah, it's not funny.
Sorry.
I wonder as well, like the Irish bit as well. That kind
that's
of
a crack.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
That, is that your mum or dad?
My mum is the Irish one, but like I've got my uncles are hilarious. I mean, they have got the proper
crack and just the gift of the gab,
the gift of like
spinning a yarn.
It's just a conversation that is hilarious. There's no there's no written punchlines. There's no puns. It's just sure. Let me tell you what me dear, and then like you're just like crying.
I was sat with an Irish woman in Ireland, funnily enough, and she just said, excuse the accent, she said, why do the English eat so many eggs? She hadn't spoken for half an hour, and I looked around to say, is she speaking to someone else? A really bizarre thing to say, and I'll remember that for the rest of my life, and not like no intention of being funny there at all, just kind of existing.
But
you know?
But that's coming back to comedy voice as well, isn't it? Not just, I don't mean the sound, but you're for those not into comedy, I get that wanky sort of word. I mean, when I first started, you know, I really like your comedy voice. It's like, and that's it. Anyone can tell a joke, but it's. That's owned to you, Josephine. Do you know what I mean? Like your brand, again, I hate that. But, you know, but yes, I know two brilliant Irish, well, I know lots, but Alison Spittle, I don't know if you've seen her recently. She's Irish and I just love anything she says just because she's, I don't know, it's her voice on it. And Maeve Higgins, it's that brand.
But then I think you've got that as well, Hattie. You know,
thanks. That's what I was edging for.
I know, I'm sure you were. And here I am on cue. We've worked together too long. But I hate to bring up the class thing and to label you as a certain class. But you're not. You know, you're not middle class people from middle class upbringing, which is kind of. Generally what you'll find on anyone who started comedy in the last 15 years will be more from a middle class background, and you guys aren't, and so there is a voice that certainly I recognise and that I think the audiences love because it's different.
And still even now, like if you're going to TV execs or talking about ideas, they still have no flipping idea about certain things, about upgrowing you know, growing up, and no, that wouldn't happen, and etc. And because they, let's be honest, even still now, a lot of BBC executives come from a privileged background and just don't have the idea of how things really are, sort of thing. Growing up, I've lost my thread a bit. This is what happens with a cold. I won a bursary, didn't I? Best in class, yeah. I don't know if you heard of this. It's Sian Davies, amazing Northern comic, started up this bursary for people going to Edinburgh because Edinburgh obviously is so expensive, but particularly the accommodation is ridiculous. I think you could probably stay in the Ritz for the price of going to Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so she started up this bursary, giving out little £500 to people, and I applied and I got one.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
congratulations.
I mean, I paid for two nights, probably.
but they will be the best bloody two nights you have up there.
You'll have a bed for two nights.
Yeah. But the point is she's doing a show up there, which I think she's managing to support the people that are doing, like, this this show. Anyway, look her up, Sian Davies. Listen, I'm going to play a track that you chose, Josephine.
Oh, lovely. There were so many I could have chosen.
I know. It's hard, isn't it, when people say, yeah, choose two tracks. And then we'll, going back to what you were saying about your son being diagnosed, which is what your show is about.
Yeah.
We'll hook into that a bit more. Let's find, it's a long one, so I might fade this song out. Do you want to introduce it? It's the Mary J. Blige one.
Oh, No More Drama. Yeah,
I mean,
I used to listen to that a lot when, like, the depression really hit. Mm. And I heard it the other day and it just made me think, like, how far I've come since 2014, 2015, when I was really poorly. I like, it makes me feel, but it also makes me, it also now uplifts me.
Yeah, well, that's amazing, isn't it, when a song does that. Thank you much. Such a good DJ. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm playing it, but it's not coming out. I am playing it. Oh, there we go.
Broken heart again, another lesson learned.
You're listening to the Funny Mummies podcast, the mum meetup you don't have to get dressed for.
If you've just joined us, I'm Hattie Ashton and Gemma Beagley and Josephine Lacey. And we're going to get straight into it. Now, you might, if you've been listening, you would have, your ears might have gone, oh, diagnosis. And now I really want to get to the meat and veg of your show, Josephine.
Lovely, thank you.
She's a vegetarian, so that's actually, and so are you. So I don't know what the meat.
I'm pescatarian.
I'm pescatarian as well. I'm also going a little bit vegan-ish as well.
I'll eat a vegan menu and a vegetarian menu. I'm not fussy.
Not fussy.
But I will eat fish. I love fish.
I know, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard. It's so, so convenient. Anyway, let's get to the plant-based of things then.
Get the soybeans.
Nothing organic about me.
The soybeans. Let's get to the soybeans of what your show.
So your new show. What? Let's just. What inspired it then? What made you want to start talking about? So it's your son who's autistic. Is that right?
Yes, my youngest is autistic. He will be 16 this year. So the first show, Me and My Little Einstein, was kind of like a collaboration of all the kind of jokes that I had done up until that point. Like, I had, like, 20-minute sets and I pulled stuff out. And I think because I had already done 2011, I'd had, like, 30 minutes at Edinburgh Fringe, as well as the other spots I was doing. And I then felt, like, the need, like, everyone else was doing an hour by the time I came back, and I thought, oh, I'll just put all this together. But this show kind of came about, again, with his development. The first show is when he was non-verbal.
Right.
So there was a lot of stuff going on that I was making jokes off around then. And now he'd hit puberty just before the pandemics. And I was just sitting there. What brought it about? I just thought 2020. And I just thought, you know, now's the time to write, like every comedian was doing. And I thought, well, the one rule I made was that I wasn't going to write anything about the pandemic or my lockdown, because I thought everyone else has had their own lockdown. And every other comedian is probably going to write about lockdown.
Very wise of you.
So I thought, I'll just do it. And then I was asked, I did no Zoom gigs over the pandemic.
Oh, you didn't, did you?
No, I didn't. And I was asked to do one and I said no, like it's not really my thing. And she came back and she said, well, it's not so much a ha ha, you got to be funny kind of gig.
I mean, that's my kind of gig.
Right? It's like, she said, it's more of
what
like
a boo-hoo.
Yeah, like a debate-ish kind of thing. You can bring a serious topic to the. And so when she said that, and I just thought, this idea, and as soon as I thought about it, my heart warmed, and it was the idea of the show, and I had this, it's about him in puberty, basically, so I had these kind of things to help what I was given, social stories and books to read and stuff to help him, because he's also got sensory processing disorder. So he's having a well bad time of it. Oh. And I looked at some of the literature I was given and I just thought, there is something here. So what I did, I said, all right, then. She said, well, what subject? She gave me some, and I said, well, we can talk about autism. And so she said, yeah, do that. And I brought some of this paperwork to this Zoom meeting, hashtag you can be funny if you want to. And I brought this and I just started going through it. And as I went through it, it was kind of half written itself because I was using these props. So it was there. And when I finished that, it was only like 10 minutes. But I just said, nah, Josephine, you're onto something here. If you can put that in an hour show, then you're onto a winner.
Yeah.
You're onto, and not just a winner. For me, it's like a love story, really. But yeah, so it's kind of just like, it's a tale about, how I say it when I'm plugging it, it's a tale about a pubescent teenager who happens to be autistic,
yeah,
doesn't understand his raging hormones or why he's now the owner of a huge penis now. Am I allowed to say that?
I think you're
going to
get like huge moustache or something.
No, no, he comes from good stock.
Yeah, of course, of course. Oh, bless him. I mean, you know, the obvious thing is everyone... you know, puberty's hard anyway.
Exactly.
And like you say, not being able to... So what's his... I'm trying to get the level... I worked with an autistic adult for about 6-7 years.
Yeah.
I was just sort of employed as a... his buddy, really.
Yeah.
I met his dad doing a photography job and I said I was looking for something part-time. And he was like, look, we don't want like a carer type person.
Yeah.
We want just a mate to take him out. And then it ended up being some of the happiest 6-7 years of my life.
Yeah.
He came to my wedding.
Oh, congratulations. Oh. I didn't even know you got married.
Oh, yeah. Years ago, mate. And Stefano. And so he was like, yeah, so he must be, well, he would have been 19, 20. So he was after puberty when I met him. But then like 26, 27 when I couldn't do it anymore after having my second boy. Oh, God, now I've forgotten the thread.
No,
I went back emotionally with Steph then because...
you asked me about his level.
Yeah, so a comprehension because with Steph, when I first met him, I thought, this is my ignorance. I'm just going to be, you know, I'm sure you get this from audiences who know nothing about autism. I was like, to me, like, they're either, they talk a lot or they don't talk at all. It seemed, that seemed to be what I understood. And I thought, please let him be the one that talks a lot. And he wasn't. He, you know, his dad said he's got like about 26 word vocabulary.
Wow.
And I was like, oh shit, how am I going to work with this? Because how I get through stuff is talking, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it was a good practice for me because I had to break it down. You know, even the simplest instructions, he would freak out at. And like, so my job would be taking him to the cinema, taking him bowling, all these sort of things. And if a place didn't have the drinking that he always likes to get, whoa, 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 freak out. And that's, am I along the same sort of lines?
Sort of lines. So when Callum was diagnosed at 2.5,
he was diagnosed 2.5 as
yeah,
well.
Well, I knew he was different soon after he was born. He didn't look different, but there was just, I don't know, that mummy feeling. I had two other children before.
Right, okay.
And he hardly made a sound. I mean, not even cried. He spoke a lot with his eyes.
Okay.
I was told on the day of his diagnosis that he doesn't see why he should verbally communicate.
Okay.
Words are not going to be... his fault, and I was told he would never talk. He has vocabulary now. He's
wow.
a literal thinker and a visual learner. So like your friend Steph. You can't deviate, you can't fling in an extra word to try to explain something.
Yeah.
It has to be so rigidly black and white and repeated so many times.
Right.
It's the repeating that can get to me.
And obviously no sarcasm. You just cannot be sarcastic.
No,
right?
he can't be sarcastic, doesn't get jokes. And what he finds funny is what he finds funny really isn't funny. Not in the sense of a comedian. It's just that he's not very good at receiving positive interaction. He never, ever has been. So, like, he's been deemed a savant for his musicality. Like, I've made, like, my own little Beethoven, but he doesn't like to be watched. He doesn't like to be recorded, but he plays so beautifully. I have to crack his door and record him like that. And if he catches me, he gets upset. He has the meltdown.
Does he perform? But he won't. So he won't go on stage.
No. Now he'll play a few. Before the pandemics, he would play a few Christmas carols at the school on their Christmas party. But then you couldn't be around the piano. I couldn't record him playing. It was just he'd let his music teacher stand with him. He doesn't have to read music, although he can read music.
Wow.
He's absolutely, he has absolute pitch. It wasn't me who deemed him a savant. His music teacher is just well gel of him. Like, well, he said, I'm just, he said, what it takes me to learn in 10 two-hour sessions, so that's 20 hours, my son learns in 30 minutes. So, like, he is honestly, and he's brilliant at maths as well. He's been deemed a genius in some areas of maths. And unbeknownst to me, until, like, he got involved in music, I didn't know how mathematical music was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, language is really difficult, like, trying to explain stuff. And it gets him frustrated. And he tries, he'll stand there and you can see his brain ticking and he'll say, I'm trying to think of the right word.
Mm.
But he might not even have that word in his vocabulary. So he gets really kind of...
And how do you deal... about you, Josephine, how do you deal with it then? Like, I mean, obviously doing your comedy. And, like, do you talk about that in your show? Like, because we all, like, see mums now, you know, lose it a bit with their kids. And you've got to be... It's such a different level for you, I imagine.
Depends if there's witnesses. If there's witnesses, I lose me. If there's no witnesses, I lose me shit. Do you know what I mean?
You seem to... The last conversation we had, actually, talking about... You just seem to have, like, real acceptance and understanding of what Callum's condition is. And so it's really like inspiring to hear you talk about when you've spoken about, the thing is, he is different. He cannot. So when he's screaming and shouting, that's not like me screaming and shouting.
No.
It's just... So, and you know, and that kind of, so, like, how long did it take to get that acceptance? Or is it something that you have to pick up and put down and, you know?
Right. Well, I only, before his diagnosis, I'd only heard the word autism. Prior to that, he
Which
was,
that would have been what? What sort of time was this? 2000 and...
2008?
Yeah. So it wasn't really...
Like, well, he was born 2006. I don't think then, do you? At marks where he should have been hitting, like, he wasn't following me out of a room. There was no kind of speech. He wasn't even moving his lips to mimic. He would hold my hand and bring me in the kitchen and just stand there and I would have to work out what he wanted. And if I didn't get it quick enough, there'd be a meltdown. And because he was nonverbal, he was very self-harming and harming to me. And you think, well, how can a two-year-old... But, I mean, he used to bite, like, he used to come in for a cuddle and then just take a chunk out of me. And that's all sensory. Mm. And I think, of course, a lot of it, I mean, if he wasn't my child, you might have, you know, you might leave it on the corner. Do you know what I mean? But when it's your own...
Right, yes, OK.
And someone said to me once, and it was hard times, I'd go in my room and cry and, you know, at that time... Being so demanding when you've got a little and they don't sleep is different from now. Mm. Now he's like, he can occupy himself.
Yes.
He can play his piano with his headphones on. I live with my 29-year-old who's up all night because he's a gamer. So now I can say, listen, I'm going to bed. Right, listen out for your brother. Unless one of you is bleeding to death or turning blue from not breathing, do not come into my room. Like, I can say that now. And, like, he gets picked up by escort. And I try not to, I mean, you lot are privileged. I try not to make an appointment till the afternoon.
We are very privileged. But we're calling this early in the morning.
Right. No, but, like, I will try and catch up in the morning if I'm tired. But I remember, and I always keep this with me, I remember one time someone said to me, I can't even remember who it was, but I was feeling low, and they just said, do you know what, Josephine, you have to remember God gives special children to special people. Mm-hmm. So he's yours for a reason. And I don't think you're ever given more than you can handle. You think you are, but if you allow your conscious and your subconscious to have that balance, you will always find a solution, or at least work your way out of something. And I'm not good at stress anyway. Stress will kill me, nearly has done before. So, but yeah.
It is an acceptance.
There has to be an acceptance. I had a friend, funny enough, she hasn't spoke to me in a while, and I think it was to do with our last communication. But we both found out our child was diagnosed at the same time. We became kind of friends, educated. Her and her husband are well educated and work within that sector. And I think the boys were their last year of primary school, and they were in primary because he's just moved a few years ago. And she pointed out to me that he was having trouble. He was in a mainstream school and he was secluded and everything. And she would talk to me a lot, and it came out that he never knew he was autistic. So I said, well, why does he think he has a one-to-one? And why does he think he's segregated from his peers?
Yeah.
And she just said, oh, we tell him that he needs extra help here. And I thought, like, you are so making a rod for that boy's back and your own. And I didn't get, because she'd already told me within her university, she has autistic adults that, you know, a program is made for them. There's learning that, like, and I just thought, how can you support them that way? But then I'm not saying in any way she was a bad mother. What she was doing, what she felt best.
It was
best. Hard
for her to accept that it was happening to her personally.
Okay, so I think it was hard.
No, I'm right, so glad you brought this up, because I recently, and I don't care if my hairdresser hears this, because I was talking to my hairdresser, and actually it was a new girl started it. No, somebody else, that was it. The assistant there. And she was telling me, I often ask about her nephew who's autistic, because I talk about my son, which people who listen to this will hear on and off. He's getting tested soon, actually, for whatever, we don't know. But her nephew sounds quite, you know, he's going to a special school and stuff like that. But she said the other day, she went, and I think I was saying something, she went, well, he doesn't know. And I went, what? And I think he's about 10. And I went, what? And I had to be careful, because I'm like, you know, I don't want her to burn my hair or something. But I was like, what? I'm so glad you said that, because I thought that's wrong.
I think it's wrong.
It's part of them. You're making it something to be ashamed of if you're not. And also it makes it clear for them. I know my nephew, who's now a teenager, he's not that severe, but he knows. So he can say, sorry, sometimes my reactions, I don't always react properly because I have trouble. You know what I mean? Like, he can explain things to people.
Yes, I just... Yeah, I mean, and she used to admire and say, like, well, when does Callum know? I'm like, I put a word to it as soon as I knew.
Yeah.
Like, it's not him that needs changing or fitting in. It's the world around them.
Yes.
We are the neurotypical ones. We are the ones who have the sense to say, oh, all right, that person's finding that difficult. Let me accommodate them.
Yeah.
Because my son can't accommodate your needs.
No, he can't. He cannot
put his mind around how to make you feel better around him. And why should he? The worst thing ever said to me, and it was true, and it was in my first show, was he was having, when he was first diagnosed and we were brought to, he was referred to speech and language, he was referred to OT, he was under five, so it was all happening at the hospital. He's got a skin condition, he's got allergies. They initially thought his autism was a secondary diagnosis. They actually thought he had a brain tumour at first, so he had to have a series of MRIs. Which, like, completely freaked me out. Luckily, it transpired that he didn't. And he came out of the hospital and had a complete meltdown. We were on the floor outside Charing Cross Hospital. He was of an age. I was on the floor. I had my legs wrapped round him, my arms wrapped round him, trying to give him deep pressure, trying to stop him running into Fulham Palace Road. And this woman stopped where I was sitting and said to me, if he was mine's, I wouldn't bring him out.
Oh, no.
And I remember hearing it, but not really acknowledging it till I got home. And like that day, it took me about 3 hours to get home for a 45-minute journey.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was. It was like a day I will always remember. It scarred me. And when I got home, it sunk in what she said.
Yeah.
And I don't think I went out for about 3 days. Oh. I think I cried for the rest of the day. I just remember her saying it. And I just think, do you know what? If I had acknowledged that the way I do now, old Biddy or no old Biddy, I would have kicked her right in front of the 220 bus. Forgive me.
No, I don't blame you.
But I mean, it was just upsetting. Yeah, but it's ignorance as well.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, equally, I've had someone on the bus who saw me using cue cards, his pet cards, when he was non-verbal on the bus, telling him where we were going. And a woman said to me, she said, oh, do you mind me asking, is your son autistic? And I always say, well, why are you asking? Because if you're asking to have a little dig, then I'm just not going to waste my time. But if you are really inquiring, then I don't mind explaining. Right. And she said, you know, my daughter thinks my grandson, like you just said, he's being assessed.
Being assessed.
And like, she doesn't know much about it. She just knows the word. And I said, well, I was in your position not long ago.
Yeah.
And I can only say how it affects my son, what I noticed, and that I don't mind. And she was lovely. And you get that. I had another guy on a bus Callum was having a meltdown. It was too much. We were on the top deck. It was too much for him. I think maybe it was too light. I brought him downstairs. Unbeknownst to me, someone had gone downstairs to get away from his struggle. When we went downstairs, he shouted out, I came down here to get away from that brat. And I lost time. I screamed at him. I'm like, every day I ignore people like you. Every day, and today I'm not ignoring you. Get off the effing bus and walk if you can't bear my son. You get off.
Good
I said,
you.
He's not going nowhere. I said, he has a reason for why how he's just acted. What's your reason other than being? And there was these things I was saying. And this guy came up to, he grabbed my arm. And he said, sit down, love. And I said, no, I need to stand by, because there was only the one corner seat. So I had my son sitting there and I stop him kicking out. And he said, my nephew is autistic. He said, you ignore him. He said, people like you and my sister, I think, do brilliant jobs. He said, you're amazing. And then, of course, I just burst out into tears.
Of course, she's been nice to you,
I just burst out into tears.
It's somebody giving you that bit of comfort. Yeah. I remember a woman coming out the toilet and I thought I was having a terrible time, and she came out and she went, can I just say, I thought you handled that really well when he was having a bit of a tantrum.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you didn't see me 5 minutes before, love. It wasn't handling it so well. I always say there should be, it all happens on buses, there should be a mum bus like that's just for parents, because the amount of times like you get on a bus and then there's a buggy on there, and now they have a thing of like, you know, only have two buggies, and then whether it's mum struggling to feed. I mean, because when I was breastfeeding, like I'd always want to feed on the bus, and then I want some pervy bloke sitting next to me. Yeah. There's a breastfeeding, there's a kids. I was like, can there just be a mum bus? Or sorry, I should say parent bus. You know, just to pick up everybody with kids, because it's like, it's always like,
I think what the takeaway there for me was that sentence of, he has a reason to react like this. Yeah. He has a reason. And I think, you know, that's been my takeaway
from today. And even, I mean, unless you look dead in his face, to me, his face looks like someone who is lost in their surroundings. His eye contact isn't great. But what always gets me is that whether you have the sense or not to see, or the sense to dilute in your own mind that there's something different going on here with this individual, you cannot be blind to the fact that he's being managed. Like, I'm with him. He's never out running around feral like neurotypical children that I see, and their parents are having a pint in the park and a fag, and they don't know where their kids are. They don't know if they're running in and out of the road. They don't see them skipping over people's packed lunches.
It's a great point.
Do you know what I mean? And that gets me.
I bet it does.
You single out my boy and children and adults like my son, when you've got neurotypical children just, running around like they're feral with no rules, no guidance, no hiccup. Yeah, and that gets me. He was asked to come off a trampoline. We were in like a Butlins or a Pontins, I can't remember. And he was asked, there was that trampoline site where you got them all lined up. Mm. And he kept deviating onto the other. He weren't bothering the child either side of them. I was there directing him back, and the guy came up to me and said, I think your son would leave. I said, my son will leave when his £5 is up, love. Just like everybody else. Just like everybody else. And I read a stinking review on TripAdvisor.
I think that sentence that you said your friend said, when you first said it about you, that God gives you what you can have, I was a bit like, oh God. If someone said that to me at times when they're having a tantrum, I'd be like throwing it in their face. But she is right, because you are in the perfect mum for him.
Yeah, I do sit down and think, when I see some of the things and the way he behaves sometimes, and his godmothers say it like, no one else could have him. And if he was born to someone else, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I know autistic children, great parents who have stopped being able to cope, who are similar age to Callum, bit younger, and they're now in residential settings.
Right.
So
okay. And do you
it's
get,
not that
because I know, Josephine, you've had to do all this alone, haven't you?
Yeah.
So do you get any sort of respite?
Since my breakdown, I was getting,
because Steph used to go away, like he could go. He called it going to a hotel. Yeah. Which he pretty much was quite a swish. He'd go away for the weekend just so they could have a break, because he can't be left on his own ever. Yeah.
So after I had, and the breakdown wasn't to do with being an autism mother. Mm. I had, my childhood came back to haunt me after I was attacked in 2014. And so after that, I got one night every other week. And I took that, and he got after school activities. Up to then, I didn't have any social services care plan. I was kind of like anti-social service. And for no reason other than...
I was going to say, you worked with vulnerable people.
Yeah, I know.
So it's weird,
I know. But social services just kind of had this stigma attached to it. But after that, I felt I was failing. I was so ill, I felt I was failing him. He was clean, he was tidy, he got on the school bus. I fed him, but I couldn't bring him out. I couldn't interact with him. I wasn't caring for myself, so I couldn't see how I was caring for him. If anything, if you look at it in a way of he was caring for me in the sense of if I didn't have him, I wouldn't have had anyone to make sure he needed to be clean, he needed to be fed, he needed to get on that school bus, he needed me to make sure I was there to get him off that bus. Yeah. If I didn't have that, I think I would not be here now.
A purpose. You had a purpose.
I had. There was no one else who could do it, so I had to do it.
But, you know, it's still tough, and I think you're brilliant, and we've got to wrap up in a minute. And so bringing it back round to your show, because I know myself, my show I'm doing this year, I'm talking a lot about grief. How have you found doing, like, a hard topic? Like, and obviously people go... And you sort of feel this pressure to go, but it's funny. And I sort of hate saying that in a way.
It's a great question. It's a really good question.
I think because I'm in love with the show, I am actually in love with what I'm saying and doing. And I think I've placed... And it's humorous. I think it's because it's your life, people aren't so... closed about laughing what you're trying to make humorous.
Yes. It's your story.
Because it's my
story. Yeah, you're not saying this is how you should do it or blah, blah, blah. This is
how
mine.
I see it. So I think it's more them getting into your way of thinking and allowing them to see how you're seeing and feeling things.
Yeah.
And there's things like I show them some, like one of the social stories I bring on, I think there's a couple of pages in it that are absolutely hilarious. And I explain why that's hilarious to me. Like, it's a visual thing that you can look at and see what I'm seeing. Mm. But I get what you're saying, because I do want to do a show at some point about my depression and about my breakdown and about my past sexual and violent abuse. I'm not ready to do that yet, but the thought has come to me that there is a show in there at some point. And I think, like I said, if it's your story and you find a way of conveying it, I think it can work. But you've got to love what you're doing. You've got to own it. It's got to be that passion. And I haven't... What I'm feeling now about the show, I've not felt about any club set, and I didn't feel about my first show.
Oh, that's amazing.
And there's a comic who's at my place last month.
Soho Theatre, she's talking about.
Johnny Pelham, whose show is about his childhood sexual abuse.
Right.
I didn't go and see it. I just wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think I could have been.
Wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me, but... I was interested in the response to it, actually.
You got a good response, I assume.
I think so. Soho Theatre. Yeah.
We're going to have to play out with something. Who sort of people should come see your show, Josie? What would you say?
Well, there's been such a mix. Honestly, it is teachers have told teachers. Parents have told parents. I've been surprised how many males have also come as a group and with their partner. Anyone and everyone, there is something for everyone. You don't need to be a carer of someone who's autistic. A lot of people have come because they've seen me do stand up. Yeah. And just think, right, this is her show. This is going to be like...
This is going to be good because it's Josephine Lacey.
So it's for everyone if you're over 18.
Yeah. I'm assuming definitely over 18.
Over 18.
So if people want to find out more updates, because obviously people listen to the show at all sorts of times.
Right.
What's the best way of keeping in contact with you?
Right.
Don't give out your telephone number, Joseph.
I need someone. I will be the Instagram, really.
That's your favourite,
yeah,
isn't it?
Well, yeah, because I'm not really good at social media. I shouldn't really say that, really, should I? But I'm old school. But yeah, you can get me, you can find me just using my name, Josephine Lacey, Lacey yeah. with an E, or it's @autism mama and puberty, and mama is MAMA.
Love it.
All further dates and stuff will be there.
I'm going to play out with this Courtney Barnett song. Nothing to do with anything we're talking about, just because I like it. Thank you so much, Josephine. I think anyone will get a lot from that. I've got a lot from that. I've got a million questions I'm going to throw at you off air now. thanks, Gemma. And, just to save me editing it in later, depending on when you're listening, myself, I am doing my preview to my Edinburgh show, Hattie Ashdown, The Worry Draw. All in July, I've got low, so just go to my website, hattieashdown.com. Otherwise, if you're listening in August, come to see me at the Voodoo Rooms, 2 o'clock. Whoop, whoop. Every day from the 3rd of August to the 28th of August. If you sort of like come early on or later, that'd be better, because in the middle, my kids are coming up. So that's when I might be a bit run ragged. Yes,
that's why you might want to do it more.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're coming up for 9 days. So I've got the first bit on my own, then them, and then they bugger off again. And
Thank you for having me.
Thank
it's
you
been a
so,
pleasure.
So much.
Thank you.
Autism has been something we wanted to talk about. And actually, we've had a few mums that have been like, I don't want to talk about it. So let's talk about it. Let's keep talking about it. He has a reason. And that's what I might call this episode. Yeah. Thanks very much, my love. Let's play out with some Courtney Barnett. Thank you very much. You'll listen to The Funny Mummies on Soho Radio.
You've been listening to the Funny Mummies podcast with me, Hattie Ashdown. Thank you to my panel and guests today. Edited and produced by Scott Kingsnorth in association with Screaming of Laughter, the lunchtime comedy club where babies can come too. These shows go out live on Soho Radio for the Other Woman show. See schedule for details. Please subscribe, rate and review and share this podcast. We really appreciate it, and it's the only way more people can find us. So see you next time for more Mum and Tonic.